You are listening to an exclusive podcast on Money Control.
Welcome to Money Control's podcast series on personal finance. In the curtain raiser, we looked at some basic terminologies and the prerequisite for all investments. That's budgeting. We also touched upon things like portfolios, asset classes, and the different types of financial instruments. Today, in the second episode, we are discussing asset classes in some detail, their taxes, and the returns you can expect from them.
The Beginner's Guide to Investing, an exclusive on Money Control.
So, to recall, we defined asset classes as a group of securities that exhibit similar characteristics and behavior in the marketplace and is subject to the same laws and regulations. Asset classes are of three types: equities or stocks, fixed income or bonds, and cash equivalents or money market instruments. Some experts also include a fourth asset class, and that's real estate or other tangible assets. Now, here's an analogy that helps us understand this better. Let's assume you've invested in types of fruits and vegetables, apples, bananas, cabbage, and palak or spinach. Your general asset classes are now fruits and vegetables. The big general asset classes can be broken down into subclasses by size, industry, location, etc. The first is equities or stocks. When you buy equity, you basically own a piece of a company. How large or small depends on how much of the company's stock you buy. The second type is fixed income or debt. Here, you're lending money to a company or the government for interest. So, instruments like government bonds and other type of bonds and certificates of deposits are good examples of this category. The third type is cash and cash equivalents. The money in your savings account, in your pocket, or hidden in your piggy bank. That kind of stuff. The stuff we always seem to spend too quickly. The fourth asset class is real estate and commodities. This includes something tangible, physical, like property, natural resource commodities, and precious metals like gold. Every financial product you ever come across will fall into one of these asset classes. At this point, we can further categorize each asset class in much more detail. For instance, fruit doesn't really tell us the flavor of the food item. Similarly, stock doesn't tell us precisely what the flavor or specific type our investment is. Stocks can be Indian, foreign, those belonging to startups or MNCs, value or growth, etc. Let's begin with our asset class number one, equity, or stocks and shares. More of the world's wealth is held in stocks than in real estate or gold. Equity has been gaining popularity in India since the 1990s. For our purposes, equity translates to ownership. When you invest in equity, it means you've bought ownership into a business. For example, when you buy stocks of TCS or Reliance Industries Limited, you become a part owner of that business. Even shares allotted to you under the employee stock option program make you a small investor in the company. Owning shares in a company allow you to vote on major decisions such as appointment of directors on the board. When you invest in business, you get a percentage ownership. If the company you invested in hits a big payday, the value of your shares rise. But you need to be patient. A business grows over time, usually years and even decades. There are ups and downs, and these reflect in the stock price of the company. Studies show that over a 10-year period, the BSE Sensex gains around 12% or more, 8 out of 10 times. However, equity returns can be pretty unpredictable. So many people are wary of investing in mutual funds or direct stocks. Still, market studies show that over longer time horizons, equity assets give the best returns. If you're not comfortable investing directly, there are always mutual funds with proven track records. This brings us to an important point. Any company's management is supposed to focus on increasing shareholder value. But often, promoters and managements are more interested in enriching themselves and not necessarily the shareholders. What this means is that profits earned by the company may not be fully shown in the book of accounts. So, before investing in a company, it pays to go through the past financial performance of the company and the promoters' track record. So, what can you, as an investor, expect from equity investments? Well, in India, the stock markets have generally given returns of 12 to 16% averaged annually over the long term in the past, as I've mentioned earlier. Long term here is investing for at least one business cycle. That's typically 6 to 7 years or more. And what about the losses? Stock markets can go up 20% or down 20% in any given year. During the economic crisis of 2008, for example, stock markets went down between 50 and 60% before recovering. These events, and in general, stock market returns, cannot be predicted beforehand with any degree of certainty. Quite simply, if it was possible to predict a crash, the crashes would never have happened. However, despite the crashes and the negative years, stock markets have still delivered above inflation return to patient investors.
The Beginner's Guide to Investing, an exclusive on Money Control.
The next asset class is fixed income or debt. This is the most popular asset class in India. Fixed income refers to the class of financial products where your investment amount is more or less protected and the returns are either fixed or predictable to a large extent. There is nearly no risk involved in these products. Investing in fixed income assets is like lending your money to someone with an assurance of a return within a predefined period of time. When you open an FD, for example, or a fixed deposit in a bank, you're not so much investing as lending your money to that bank with an assurance that they will return the principal amount along with a predefined interest at the end of the agreed period. I did say nearly no risk, but this asset class does carry its own tiny bit of risk. What if you don't get your money back at the end of the loan term? Well, depending on the institution or organization you're loaning money to, the risk can vary from negligible to substantial. But PSU banks and other institutions backed by the government are generally considered a safe bet. Bear in mind that fixed deposits do not beat inflation. Even if you're receiving an 8 to 9% return on your FD, people sometimes fail to realize that this is the pre-tax return. Fixed deposits are taxable, like every other debt instrument. Once the requisite tax is paid on the returns usually only figure in the 6 to 7% range. And adjusting for an inflation of 8 to 10%, you sometimes may even receive a negative return on your fixed income investments. All things considered, those investors who want a fixed return without taking any risk or little risk with their money would be well advised to choose this asset class. There's a reason fixed income instruments are a huge favorite in our country. FDs are the first word in investment. They're simple, easy to understand financial products. The same goes for PPF or Public Provident Fund, NSC or National Savings Certificate, recurring deposits and various other government bonds or debt mutual funds. However, do note that this asset class does not beat inflation or only just keeps pace with it. Therefore, over a long term, while your investments will grow in amount, the purchasing power or value of the FD could well remain stagnant, maybe even drop. Therefore, this asset class is a fine way to safeguard your money, not so much for growth. The third asset class is cash and cash equivalents. Cash doesn't just mean hard cash. It's also the money lying in your savings bank account or liquid mutual funds. In India, the following items are regarded as cash and cash equivalents: cash at bank, cash on hand in the form of notes or coins, traveler's checks, bank checks, etc., post office and other stamps recognized by local authorities, and short-term deposits that mature in 3 months. All of these are cash equivalents, which can be converted into cash within 3 months or less. The best thing about cash is that it gives you the freedom to buy anything you want instantly. You can buy a car, a house, a phone, or invest your money in other asset classes. The freedom that cash gives you is quite broad. That's one reason most people prefer to keep a lot of cash. Further, cash cannot be tracked unless we are talking of several crores of rupees. Recall demonetization and all the cash hoarders who were rounded up? Well, many people keep their black money in the form of cash. In investment jargon, cash carries the lowest investment risk of all the asset classes. Its inherent low risk provides good diversification to riskier assets. Second, holding cash allows you to take advantage of market dips, like investing at a low point. Also, easily accessible savings held in cash can cover sudden unforeseen circumstances without having to sell better performing assets. Cash does have one problem though. By its very nature, it does not fight inflation, or very little of it if it does at all. The money lying in your savings bank account earns just 4% interest, and that doesn't really work for you as an investor. Essentially, your returns as an investor are pretty low with cash and cash equivalents. The fourth asset class is real estate and commodities. Another very popular investment asset class globally, and particularly in India, is real estate. Its appeal lies in its social status. If you have your own house, you're considered settled. Then there is the obvious tangibility of landed property. As the adage goes, they are not making any more land. That said, this pithy axiom overlooks the fact that less than 5% of land is inhabited, even in a densely populated country like India. With every passing year, more uninhabited land is coming under habitation. So, in a sense, more land is being made available for our use. This is also evident from the stagnancy in real estate prices for a few years now. I'm not going to digress into environmental implications here. So coming back, yes, real estate markets experience the same boom and bust cycles that equities do. For example, in Hyderabad, the average returns from real estate have stayed put for 7 to 8 years. But real estate is a bit more tempered. The upside is more tempered, and so is the downside. Look at it this way. Since there's no one announcing a price on TV for your home every day, one doesn't really experience the anxiety or euphoria that accompanies investments in stocks. Property funds often invest in commercial property rather than residential markets, but an investor should probably consider his or her house and any buy-to-let properties they own as part of their investment portfolio. Fund managers can commit more capital to commercial properties and deal with fewer landlords than investing in residential schemes as a result. Property funds also allow investors to invest smaller amounts than would be necessary to buy a physical asset. Real estate investments are also highly illiquid, meaning they require big-ticket investments and offer little diversification. Can you realistically think of spreading your real estate investments if you're not a billionaire? Yeah. Real estate also requires maintenance. It's tax inefficient, and if you need some money, you do not have the option of offloading, say, one room out of your 3 BHK flat to make ends meet. With this asset class, a common investor can expect returns and volatility between that of debt and equity. Considering the illiquidity and the hassles that come with real estate, it does seem like this asset class gets more credit than is due. Not that any one of us are going to stop buying property. Coming to commodities. This term refers to various types of physical goods and products which we can buy and sell for various uses. Gold, silver, copper, rice, oil, etc. are all counted under this asset class. The prices of these products depend on market demand and supply. Some analysts are of the opinion that commodities are not ideal for long-term investment, but more for trading, where an investor can benefit from market cycles, predict demand and supply moves, and get a profit or loss. There are two types of traders who trade in commodity futures. The first are buyers and producers of commodities that use commodity futures contracts for the hedging purposes for which they were originally intended. These traders make or take delivery of the said commodity when the contract expires. For example, a farmer who plants paddy can hedge against the risk of losing money if the price of rice falls before the crop is harvested. The farmer can sell rice futures contracts when the paddy is planted and guarantee a predetermined price for the rice at the time that it is harvested. The second type of commodities trader is the speculator. These are traders that trade in the commodities markets for the sole purpose of profiting from the volatile price movements. Speculators never intend to make or take delivery of the actual commodity when the futures contract expires. Many of the futures markets are very liquid and have a high degree of daily range and volatility, making them very tempting markets for intraday traders. Many index futures are used by brokerages and portfolio managers to offset risk. Further, since commodities do not typically trade in tandem with equity and bond markets, some commodities can also be used effectively to diversify an investment portfolio. Returns from the commodities can be rather volatile because each commodity has its own market and dynamics. Just a handful of commodities like gold or silver are good for long-term investing. They can be stored without any diminishing value. But it is important to note that, in general, more than a 10% permanent allocation to gold is not recommended by any investment advisor. The reason? Well, long-term returns are similar to inflation. We cannot realistically store any of the other commodities in a similar manner, so trading them in the short term is a more practical approach. So where does all this gyan leave you, the investor? As an individual investor, there is nothing wrong in trying to pick, say, TCS versus Infosys as your stock pick. But it is important that you don't put your entire portfolio in one type of stock. For example, putting all your money into a single asset class is not a wise move. In brief, consider these steps to experience some investing success that you can go ahead and build on. First, decide on your asset class mix. You should generally take less risk as you age because you have less time to recover from a severe loss, much as that sounds a little morbid. Be careful not to keep too much of your investment portfolio in cash, since inflation will make cash worth less over time. 2. Within equities, decide how much you want to allocate to growth versus value and small versus large cap. 3. Make up your mind on if you want to be an active or passive investor. If you want to go with a market index, you're a passive investor. Choose an index fund that matches your desired portfolio allocation and you're set. 4. Do you want to pick stocks yourself or pay a professional to do it? You could try picking stocks yourself, but make sure to pick enough. Enough here means not less than 20 companies across your chosen asset allocation so that you're well diversified. Chances are you probably won't beat the market, but you also won't do yourself too much harm. Number 5, look up the fees. Whether you want to pick your own actively managed mutual funds or you want to hire a professional, there are fees involved. These will eat into your returns, so make sure you know how much you will be paying for the advice you seek. And finally, leave the investment alone. Once you invest your money in individual stocks, then you probably have felt the temptation to sell when they start going down or buy when a hot stock takes off. Well, stop that. Try to avoid panicking every time it moves. Buying and selling too much is generally considered one of the main reasons investors underperform. And there you have it, ladies and gentlemen, asset classes and what you need to know before diving headlong into investing your hard-earned money.
This is an exclusive podcast on Money Control.